the environmental community doesn't understand that this is not about environment. This is about the right thing to do for the indigenous people of Alaska that were guaranteed this under the Land Claims Act.
The Alaska delegation introduces legislation for native land selection in the Tongass. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 24th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, reaction to TransCanada's latest step in their gas pipeline plans.
I think you're going to see a terrific spend, and that's going to be a spend right out of Alaskans' general fund and not out of TransCanada's pockets.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
About a dozen legislators from Alaska are in Washington, D.C., attending a national conference on issues facing state legislatures, from coping with a poor economy to influencing federal policies on topics like energy. The National Conference of State Legislatures, or NCSL, is a nonpartisan group that lobbies on behalf of state governments in the nation's capital. Fairbanks Democratic Representative Scott Kawasaki says much of the conversation this week has focused on the economic stimulus funds being allocated to states.
A lot of the interest, a lot of the focus for this NCSL has been on the Recovery Act and where the stimulus dollars go. There's quite a bit of debate as to how much money we would accept. There's some concern over the strings attached provisions. One of the sessions that I'm in right now has to deal with early learning and early childhood development courses.
Kawasaki says he wants to make sure Alaska accepts any funds dedicated to early learning and development. He says one idea on the table is funneling the money for pre-kindergarten education to organizations in Alaska already set up to work with children. Advocates say that would keep the state from investing in new programs that might not be sustainable in the long term. Some of the Alaskans visiting Washington spent yesterday visiting the Energy Department and the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. When they were at FERC, word came that TransCanada Corporation had submitted the pre-filing paperwork for an Alaska gas pipeline project. Republican Senator Liesl McGuire says it was exciting to be there when TransCanada took that step forward. The company's move to pre-file came 2 years earlier than expected. McGuire says she hopes it can catch up with the competing proposed Denali project, a collaboration between BP and ConocoPhillips, which turned in its paperwork last summer. McGuire calls TransCanada's decision to move forward proof that the Canadian company is ready to follow the U.S. guidelines.
I think it signals a move to become more a part of the United States process of permitting these large pipelines. I think one of the concerns I had as well is in follow-up conversations with TransCanada, they seemed to indicate that just wasn't the way they did business, that they were used to doing it a separate way.
But McGuire says the fact that TransCanada moved ahead with a logistical step doesn't guarantee a project will go forward. The company received the state's backing through AGIA, the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, which provides $500 million to help pay costs TransCanada racks up during the licensing process. But McGuire says the real test will come during an open season when companies can bid on space in the line to ship gas.
We all know that AGIA and the discussions, even to a degree about pre-filing, aren't relevant. In the end, it's going to be whether or not companies come forward with firm transportation commitments and the money and the gas supply to back up that line.
McGuire says legislators are looking to next spring to see if the three big gas companies decide to participate in TransCanada's project. Fairbanks Republican Representative Jay Ramris has been critical of the governor's AGIA process and says he's skeptical about TransCanada's plans. Currently, the company can submit reimbursement fees under a 50-50 split with the state. But Ramris fears they'll wait to file for most of their reimbursements until they can get more money. After open season, the company can claim a much higher percentage.
The TransCanada is waiting around until the reimbursable formula changes to 90-10. And at that time, I think you're going to see a terrific spend, and that's going to be a spend right out of Alaskans' general fund and not out of TransCanada's pockets.
FERC will now review TransCanada's pre-filing paperwork and make a decision soon on whether or not to approve its entry into the licensing process. Alaska's congressional delegation introduced companion bills in the House and Senate yesterday, proposing additional land selections in the Tongass National Forest for the Sealaska Regional Native Corporation. Republicans Congressman Don Young and Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced similar bills in the last Congress. The new version also has the support of freshman Democratic Senator Mark Begich. Murkowski's office says the new bill includes changes made to reflect public comments and concerns with the previous version. It drew criticism from some residents worried about maintaining access to hunting and fishing lands and from environmentalists opposed to logging. Young says the legislation is needed so Sea Alaska can conclude its Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act entitlements.
The environmental community doesn't understand that this is not about environment. This is about the right thing to do for the indigenous people of Alaska that were guaranteed this under the Land Claims Act.
Sea Alaska already has the right to select additional federal property in southeast Alaska, but the corporation says that land is of little value or too controversial. It's pursued legislation to increase its options, in part to boost its dwindling timber base. But environmentalists say that's not necessary. Buck Lindekugel with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says Sea Alaska could select other areas, but is instead trying to cherry-pick the best forestry lands in the Tongass. Lindekugel says that's not fair.
We support Sea Alaska getting its entitlement, but this isn't the way to go about doing it. And we think any action dealing with changing the law needs to look at all the issues affecting the Tongass. It needs to take a comprehensive approach and involve all the stakeholders, and this doesn't do it.
Lindekugel says Sea Alaska will log areas that are valuable to the entire region, especially on Prince of Wales Island.
Now they're going to give the remaining, old growth in these areas to Sea Alaska for more corporate logging. And it just means that they're not going to have the habitat to support the wildlife that they need to harvest to fill their food lockers. So it's going to have a direct impact on those folks.
He says some residents of Prince of Wales are concerned about being able to access hunting and fishing grounds if the Tongass lands are turned over to Sea Alaska. However, Congressman Young says that should not be a problem.
I don't believe my bill precludes access. I've always said that there was always that booger band running out there talking about not having access. But I don't believe you're going to see that being a problem. Existing roads will still exist.
Sea Alaska's timber operation is among the biggest employers on the island. The state's Timber Trade Association has endorsed the corporation's land selections as a way to support the industry. Senator Murkowski says the bill will help revitalize the economy of southeast Alaska. The new legislation differs from the previous versions. It reduces Sea Alaska's potential timberland selection pool by 2,000 acres to about 78,000 acres, and it promises full public access to some sacred sites and provides historic trail conveyances near Yakutat and Cake. It's not yet known how the bill will fare in the House and Senate, since some nationwide environmental groups have targeted the Tongass for protection, but Congressman Young says he does already have some Democratic supporters. City of Ketchikan Mayor Bob Weinstein is resigning his position at the end of next month to work for Senator Mark Begich. Weinstein was elected in 1997, making him Ketchikan's longest-serving city mayor. From Station KRBD, Deanna Garrison reports.
Begich Thursday named Weinstein and Juneau resident Chris Ashenbrenner as his field representatives for Southeast Alaska. Weinstein will serve as the Southern Southeast field representative and will be based in Ketchikan. Ashenbrenner, who currently serves as the executive director for Public Safety's Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, will oversee the Juneau office. He'll be the Northern Southeast field representative and will be based out of Juneau. Weinstein says he's honored to serve Begich.
This position with Senator Begich is a great opportunity for me in a lot of different ways, and I think it shows that by his appointment of two people, one in Ketchikan and one in Juneau, I think it shows his commitment to Southeast Alaska as a region.
Prior to his 12 years as mayor, Weinstein served another 6 years on the city council. Weinstein's resignation announcement came as a shock to Councilmember Chuck Freeman, who says Weinstein will be missed.
The amount of time and effort that he has devoted to the city and to trying to further its best interests has been phenomenal. I mean, he's had the time and he's spent it. Lobbied Juneau, he's at the city hall, he's doing this and doing that. And jokingly, I told him the other day, I said, you've ruined the job for anybody else because nobody's going to be able to devote this kind of time and energy to this office.
Freeman says he has often disagreed with Weinstein at the council table, but those differences have never deteriorated into personal attacks. Carl Amelon has worked as the city manager for all 12 years that Weinstein has served as mayor.
While we haven't always agreed on every issue, I think the one thing that can be said about Bob is that he's always had the best interest of the community at heart. And he's always been very much focused over the years, and I think has played a large part in the council, you know, taking definitive directions and trying to move the community forward.
Weinstein will resign his position on May 31st. He and Ashenbrenner will officially join the Begich staff on June 1st. The Ketchikan City Council can either choose to appoint Weinstein's replacement or wait until the fall municipal election. Weinstein's fourth term was scheduled to end in October. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, advice on how to catch a sheefish.
They don't stay in one place, they come and go. Just got to drill holes and find out where they're at.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Alaska Airlines is joining the ranks of air carriers charging for the first checked bag. The Seattle-based company announced yesterday that it will begin charging a $15 fee on July 7th, but it will continue to allow three free pieces of luggage for flights within Alaska. The carrier and its regional partner, Horizon Air, will continue to charge $25 for the second checked bag, as they have since last July, and they will cut the $100 third bag fee in half. Spokesman Greg Latimer says the new revenue will not lower ticket prices, but it will help the airline match competing carriers' rates.
Over the last few months, especially with the economic outlook and the advances drying up, with all of our major competitors, with the exception of Southwest, going with a first bag fee, we found ourselves in a significant cost disadvantage. You know, in this economy, it is often about value, and low fares are obviously an important mix and part of that value, and we have to match low fares.
The fee comes with a guarantee that luggage will be delivered within 25 minutes after arrival. Customers with late bags will be given 2,500 airline miles or $25 off a future flight. Latimer says officials made a point to continue exempting Alaska flights from all baggage fees.
That's really an acknowledgement and a respect for the fact that folks have different travel needs within the state of Alaska. And so when we enacted a second bag fee, we did not contemplate that for travelers within the state. And I can tell you it wasn't even debated at all when we decided to go with the first check bag. It was just an absolute given.
Many small-town Alaskans use the airline to bring groceries and household goods home from shopping trips. First class and MVP passengers will also not be charged the first bag fee. The same is true for active-duty military personnel, unaccompanied children, and those flying to Mexico City and Guadalajara. The fee starts July 7th for flights booked after May 1st. The baggage charge was announced as the airline released its first quarter earnings. Alaska Air Group, the parent company of Alaska and Horizon, reported a net loss of about $19 million. That's down from more than $37 million the previous year, but still a significant loss.
Obviously, we're faced with all the same challenges that other airlines are, and really a lot of businesses, and that's obviously slowing consumer purchasing. And so we obviously are facing a pretty tough year ahead.
There's been speculation that the airline is up for sale or the subject of merger talks. Latimer says remaining independent is the best option at this time. Kotzebue is still buried under record amounts of snow, but signs of spring are starting to arrive in the Arctic city. The longer days and warmer temperatures are luring residents out onto the ice of Kotzebue Sound to catch sheefish. On a good night, it's not hard to hook a sled full of the white fish. But as APRN's Annie Fite found out on a recent evening, waiting around for the fish can be almost as much fun as actually catching one.
You don't have to travel far from Kotzebue to find a sheefish. On a beautiful evening earlier this week, snow machines dotted Kotzebue Sound only a mile or so from town. Residents use augers to drill perfectly round holes in the ice. Rosie Barr lives in Anchorage now, working for Nana, but she grew up fishing for sheafish in Kotzebue. She says it's the perfect way to end a long work day.
Like in Anchorage, you know, you drive and get off work and you get all these errands to run by the time you get home. You know, you're hungry, it's dinner time, and out here you could fish till 11 o'clock at night. And you're not tired. At least if you're a fishing fool.
Barr scoops the slush out of her hole and lowers a bluish hook into the water. Instead of a fishing pole, she has a beautiful homemade wooden tool that looks like it has had years of use.
We're jigging. This is just a, I don't know, kind of looks like a bow and arrow handle almost, you know? But it's curved so that you can use your wrist, flex it up and down.
The motion is supposed to trick the sheafish into thinking the lure is prey swimming up and down. Tonight, they don't seem to be buying it, but Barr says she's prepared to wait.
Oh, yeah. For fish, I'm incredibly patient. For other things, I'm not, but for fish, because you never know which jig might get you one.
Soon, another group pulls up on snow machines to ask how the fishing is. Ellen Booth says she was fishing a few miles farther from town, but the sheafish weren't biting there either. On a night last week, though, she filled her sled quickly. A single sheafish can weigh up to 50 pounds, but the average size is around 20.
Yeah. Hey, Rosie.
How you doing, Ellen?
See if we could get the biggest fish.
You know what? One sheafish will be the biggest fish.
Oh.
Because they're all tomcods right now.
They don't bite when there's top cuts.
They don't? Really? Hang on, I'm getting another tom cod.
Tom cods are skinny silver fish that don't weigh much. When Barr catches one, she quickly cuts it up for bait. A few feet away, Barr's good friend Franny Owens has pulled her snow machine alongside her hole so she has a padded seat to rest on while she jigs. She says there are lots of ways to enjoy sheafish.
Well, either fry or bake. Or frozen, with seal oil? Raw, frozen, and seal oil, dipped in seal oil.
It's 9 p.m. now, but the sun is still high in the Arctic sky. The air is warm and still. Owen says even when the fish aren't biting, it's nice to get out and enjoy the fresh air and socializing.
Sometimes we could be out here for hours just for the peace and quiet, nice weather, and just to visit people. Sometimes we sit and socialize with people we don't even normally talk with on a daily basis. Everybody's so happy to get out after the long, cold, dark winter.
Dan Savatilik says he's been fishing sheafish for 30 years. On this night, he's not having much luck either, but he says that's just how it is sometimes. He says a few weeks ago, it was a different story.
We're catching them just left and right. But they don't stay in one place. They come and go. Just got to drill holes and find out where they're at.
Savatilik doesn't stay long.
Well, we ain't going to get any fish just standing here. We got to go look for them. So.
He says goodbye and sets off on his snow machine. Everyone goes home empty-handed on this evening, but no one seems to mind. Least of all, Rosie Barr, who relishes her time out on the ice.
I don't know. It's just fishing. Fishing's just, I don't know. It just feels good, you know? I can fish, and even if I don't catch anything, it still feels good.
Still, she says, the thrill of hooking into a big sheafish and pulling it up through the ice is one of the best in the world. In Kotzebue, I'm Annie Feit.
According to the National Association of Realtors, the 13-state western region is showing an increase in the number of home sales that took place in March of 2009 compared with March of last year. The downside is that boost in sales is accompanied by a decrease in the value of the homes. Western cities like Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Los Angeles registered an increase in home sales last month, but they also registered a sharp drop in median home prices. The bright spot, Anchorage, Alaska, which the report indicates showed a rise of 8% in the median price of homes.
Well, the median is actually means that half of the homes that were sold were above that amount and half of them were below that amount. We usually track the average sales prices, which takes in an average of everything that was sold. So sometimes those numbers can be a little bit different.
Sherry Simmons with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation says AHFC has no data from the first quarter of this year yet, but she says the trend in Alaska is positive.
Overall, Alaska's just been really lucky. You know, we're still having the housing market that is very stable. It has had the lowest foreclosures in the either in the country or within the top few states that are having very low foreclosures and delinquencies. So I think we can be assured, at least for the immediate future, that things are still going strong.
Simmons says low interest rates make this a good time for first-time home buyers and veterans to take advantage of special rates. She says fewer homes are being built in Alaska, but the sales market is remaining steady. Nationally, home sales dropped 4% from last March. Federal economic stimulus funding could bolster the state's free home weatherization program. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation weatherization officer John Anderson says if Governor Palin signs off on it, $18.5 million will specifically target home efficiency upgrades for low-income Alaskans.
The stimulus money for weatherization comes with a lot more stringent requirements because of the federal ties. The income limits are different. That money would get injected right into our five major weatherization providers: Alaska Community Development, Interior Weatherization, Tanana Chiefs, the Municipality of Anchorage, and Rural Cap. And all that would do is just help extend the weatherization program further.
Anderson says Alaskans have been taking advantage of the weatherization program since the legislature expanded eligibility and pumped $200 million into it in 2008. He says about half of that money will be paid by next spring.
Last year, we had $31 million in 59 different communities. This year, in this next grant cycle, we expect that number to be $60 million, and we're going to be in 90 communities.
Anderson expects about 4,000 homeowners and renters will have upgrades completed in their homes by this time next year.
Generally, it's boilers, it's insulation, it's air sealing is probably the number one item. Some windows, some doors, and life safety considerations also to make sure that they do have carbon monoxide detectors and they don't have leaky gas in their home.
Anderson says the state is spending an average of $17,000 per home, but that includes work in remote villages where logistics substantially jack up costs. Interior Weatherization Executive Director Angela Ketzler says residents of the Fairbanks area make up a good portion of statewide demand for the weatherization program.
We did 200 homes last year, a little over 200. We have doubled the amount of homes to do this year, 400. And we expect to get through our whole waiting list. We had quite the waiting list last year and couldn't get to everybody, but we're hoping to get to mostly everybody this year.
Ketzler says interior weatherization has tripled the number of employees it has in the field doing retrofits at qualifying homes across the Fairbanks North Star Borough and south along the Parks and Richardson highways to Cantwell and Delta Junction.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state. Learn more at rasmussen.org.
The Togiak herring fishery may be getting off to a bit of a late start this year. Alaska Department of Fish and Game commercial fisheries biologist Tim Sands says the previous forecast was May 3rd, but that used sea surface temperatures readings from mid-March, and he says it's still been cold.
My best guess at this point is late second to early third week of May is when the herring fishery will start.
Sands goes on to say that the temperature between now and late May could still change that forecast. Fish and Game hopes to have their first flyover survey sometime next week or the following week. The herring forecast was released in November and is predicted at a slight decrease from the previous year, with an expected 22,000 tons for the Togiak Sack Row harvest. Some familiar political faces were seen at Comfish Alaska's dinner held at the Golden Anchor on the U.S. Coast Guard base in Kodiak last night. Former Senator Ted Stevens made an appearance as a special guest at the sold-out event. Look How Far We've Come, celebrating the 50th anniversary of statehood and the Alaska seafood industry. Stevens received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the United Fishermen of Alaska and was inducted as a charter member of the organization's Seafood Hall of Fame. Governor Sarah Palin also attended. KMXT's Eric Wander has more.
After a keynote speech on the history of Alaska's seafood industry by historian Bob King and the induction of 20 charter members of the Seafood Hall of Fame, Stevens, who was among the inductees, was presented with the honorary award. He talked about enactment of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which established a 200-mile exclusive economic zone off Alaskan shores. He also highlighted the threat the illegal, unregulated, and unreported, or IUU, fishery now poses to the industry, operating in some cases just beyond the 200-mile limit.
We led the world in extending jurisdiction 200 miles off the shore. There is not a country in the world today that doesn't claim the 200-mile limit. And we did it. Alaska brought that about. And we brought it about not for the fishermen. We did it for the species. We did it to protect the reproductive capability of the fisheries that we wanted to succeed and be continued year in and year out so that we have generation after generation enjoy the benefits of the sea.
Stevens took the opportunity to address the recent dismissal of his case after being convicted of 7 felony corruption charges, saying only that he would not comment further on the matter because of an ongoing Justice Department investigation of the original prosecutors.
I just want to make one comment. When the judge dismissed the case against me, and he said in nearly 25 years on the bench, he had never seen anything approaching the mishandling and misconduct that it's seen in my case.
Mark Vinsel, Executive Director of United Fishermen of Alaska, and Joe Childers, the organization's president, presented Stevens with the award along with honorary lifetime membership, both saying he has done much to benefit Alaska's fishing and seafood industries. Palin said Kodiak was the perfect place for an event like Comfish. She discussed the importance of the commercial fishing and seafood industries to Alaska and highlighted its successful management and sustainability. She said all Alaskans, especially those in places like Kodiak, are proud of Alaska's fishing heritage.
Sustainability to some is just kind of a buzzword or a concept, but it is a factor in the world market. And in Alaska, sustainability isn't a fad or a gimmick. It's a long-held, heartfelt commitment to our resources and to our children, to those future generations who we want to pass on that sustainability.
Fisheries journalist Lainey Welch served as master of ceremonies at the gala dinner. I'm Eric Wander.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Adam Kane in Dillingham, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Eric Wander in Kodiak, and Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, Alan Lockyer from Anchorage, and Annie Fite from Kotzebue. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by STEMS, where thoughts are sent with flowers and gifts can be blooming with color and aroma. STEMS in Anchorage at 907-563-3366. And by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.